practice the Dharma to create a refuge. Primarily, it's a refuge for ourselves, but it spreads around to other people as well. What do we need refuge from? Well, primarily our own stupidity, our own carelessness, our own lack of skill. We want happiness. Everything we do is based on the desire for happiness, and yet we create suffering over and over and over again. That's the danger. And of course, it creates a danger not only for ourselves, but also for the people around us. So we have to learn to look inside to see why we're not skillful, exactly where the causes are, and what we can do about them. And for a lot of us, this is difficult. We don't like looking at our own shortcomings. And it's a peculiarity of our modern educational system is that we're very rarely taught how to develop skill in areas that we're not already talented. From a very early age, we tend to be channeled into areas where the teachers notice it. We tend to have some talent. We tend to have some aptitude. And we learn to specialize in those areas. And as for the areas where we're not very good, well, let somebody else take care of that. That's the attitude. But what happens is we never really learn the basic skill of how to learn, how to develop an aptitude in an area where it doesn't come automatically, doesn't come easily. This is one of the first things we run up against as we meditate. As John Lee once said, when you practice, the first thing you learn to see is your own defilements, your own greed, your own anger, your own delusion, all the unskillful qualities of your mind, and we don't like to see them. So we have to learn how not to get discouraged by them. Remember that everybody meets up with these things in their meditation. And it's not something you get out of the way so you can really meditate. Getting them out of the way is an important part of the meditation. Learning how to get past them is an important part. How to work through them. The other important part of the practice is to learn to be very clear about your purpose. We're here for happiness. Notice the Buddha doesn't say that the search for happiness is a selfish thing. We're not here to deny ourselves for the sake of others. We're here to take our own happiness seriously. And as a result, other people will benefit as well. The Buddha had discovered a path for how to take the desire for happiness and turn it into something skillful, something noble. This is a noble path we follow. And as we learn to develop balance in our own lives, we help other people maintain their balance too. The image in the text is of two acrobats, one acrobat standing up on the end of a bamboo pole, the other acrobat standing on the first acrobat's shoulders. And in the story the Buddha tells, the acrobat underneath tells the one on top, okay, you look out after me and I'll look out after you, and that way we'll be able to perform our tricks and come down safely and get our reward. And the assistant standing on the first one's shoulder says, no, that won't do. I'll look after myself, you look out after yourself, and that way we'll be able to come down safely. In other words, if you learn how to maintain your balance, it makes it easier for the other person to maintain his or her balance. The less suffering you cause yourself, the less of a burden you'll be on other people. So this is not a selfish thing, learning how to train your mind, taking your own happiness seriously. In fact, this refuge we develop within. We talk about taking the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha as a refuge. But the real refuge is when you take their qualities and you develop them in your own heart. And what are those qualities? The primary qualities of the Buddha are three. There's wisdom, there's purity, there's compassion. And as he explains it, each of these three is based on your desire for happiness. They're developed through taking your desire for happiness seriously. Wisdom, as the Buddha said, starts with the question, what, when I do it, will lead to my long-term welfare and happiness? What's wise about the question? Well, one, makes you realize that it's your actions that are going to make the difference. And two, you want a happiness that's long-term. Everything in life requires effort. So you want to find the type of effort, the type of desire, the type of aspiration that's really going to give you long-term benefits. There's a verse in the Dhammapada. It says, if you see a greater happiness that comes from abandoning a lesser happiness, be willing to abandon the lesser one for the sake of the greater one. I mean, it's so basic and common sense that there's one Pali translator who said, it can't possibly mean this. There must be some other meaning to this because it's so universal. Everybody knows that already. Nobody needs to be told that. But if you look at the way people live their lives, everybody needs to be told that. Again and again and again. I have a friend who is a novelist, and every time one of her novels comes out, she has to go to the alumni clubs of the university where she teaches and read passages from her novels. In her last novel, the short scene that she had selected, it was self-contained enough that it would make sense in a 10-minute, 15-minute reading, was of a woman and her stepdaughter playing chess. And the stepmother is telling her stepdaughter, while they're playing chess, that if you want to be happy in life, you have to decide that there's one thing you want more than anything else, and be willing to sacrifice everything else for that one thing. And the daughter's half listening and half not listening. But she's beginning to notice that her stepmother's a very sloppy chess player. She's losing pieces all over the board. So the stepdaughter gets more aggressive and gets careless as a result. And sure enough, she gets checkmated. Of course, the purpose of this incident is to show that the stepmother's illustrating her teaching by the way she plays chess. She's willing to sacrifice some of the pieces so she can win. My friend said after reading that to two or three alumni clubs, she had to stop because nobody wanted to hear that message. Everyone wants to win at chess and keep all their pieces. But this is the basic principle that the Buddha said is lies at the heart of wisdom, seeing that the happiness that you want to work for is one that's going to be long-term, and you should be willing to sacrifice other things for the sake of that. Again, notice wisdom doesn't mean that you ignore your own needs or ignore your own happiness for the sake of others. It starts by taking your own happiness really seriously and realizing that your efforts are the factor that's going to bring that happiness about. The second quality, compassion, that comes from taking your desire for happiness seriously as well. There's another story in the canon. There's King Basanadi is up in his bedroom with his queen, Malika. And he turns to her in a tender moment and says, is there anyone that you love more than yourself? And of course, he's expecting her to say, yes, Your Majesty, you. And if this were a Hollywood movie, you know where the story would go from there. But it's not a Hollywood movie, it's the Pali Canon. And Queen Malika is no fool. She says, no. And then she turns to him, how about you? Is there anyone you love more than yourself? And the king has to admit that, no, there's nobody he loves more than himself. So he leaves the palace, goes down to see the Buddha, reports to the Buddha the conversation they had. And the Buddha's response is interesting. He says, yes, you search the whole world, you'll never find anybody you love more than yourself. And the same is true of everybody else. They don't love anyone more than themselves. And then the conclusion is interesting. He says, when you reflect on this, you would never want to harm anyone else. There's two ways you can read that. One is the sense of sympathy we have for other people. We all have this in common. This love for our own happiness, this desire for our own happiness. And then two, a more pragmatic approach is, you think about, if your happiness depends on someone else's suffering, it's not going to be a long term. They're going to do whatever they can to put an end to that happiness. So when you reflect seriously on your happiness, you have to take other people's happiness into consideration as well. And that's the basis for compassion. So again, it's based on this principle of taking your happiness seriously. And it leads to a noble quality of mind, compassion. As for purity, the Buddha says it starts by looking very carefully at your actions to see, do they really benefit yourself and other people? In other words, it's a reality check. You say you want to be wise, you say you want to be compassionate. Well, look at your actual actions. When you plan to do something, what results do you anticipate? Are they going to be harmful to yourself, harmful to other people? If they are, don't follow through with that action. If you don't foresee any harm, go ahead with the action. This can be mental actions as well as physical and verbal. If while you're doing the action you see harm, you stop. Because in the Buddhist principle of causality, some causes give their results immediately. You don't have to wait for three lifetimes. When you spit in the wind, it's not going to take three lifetimes for it to come back at you. But then again, some results don't show themselves immediately, which is why after you're finished with the action, you look at the long-term results. And if you see that over time, that action did cause harm, then you resolve never to repeat it. If it didn't cause harm, then you can take joy that you're on the path. And the Buddha concludes by saying, all those who have become pure in their thoughts, their words, and their deeds have developed purity just in just this way. So there you are. Three very noble qualities, wisdom, compassion, and purity. And they all come from taking your desire for happiness seriously. Realizing that happiness is not something that's not going to just float your way. It comes from your actions, so you have to take your actions seriously. Be careful about what you do. Be heedful about what you do. This is why we develop, it's why we spend so much time trying to develop mindfulness and alertness, trying to develop discernment in our practice. And the realization that our actions really are important. They might make all the difference in the world between whether we're going to be happy or whether we're going to suffer, whether we're going to cause happiness for ourselves and others or suffering for ourselves and others. As the Buddha said, his teaching is the karma that leads to the end of karma. It's a very special kind of karma. It requires all your powers of observation, all your ingenuity. To ultimately lead to that point where you don't need to do anything more for the sake of happiness. We're talking today about the sense of self that develops, or that originally gets thwarted in the course of the practice. But the Buddha's not asking you to totally drop your sense of self right away. You learn how to develop a more skillful sense of self, i.e. by working on the skills and the practice. This sense of self is a type of karma as well. It's something you create. growth as you get a sense of your talents, your abilities. You develop those talents and abilities. And it's inevitable that a certain sense of self will develop around that, and that's perfectly fine. Because it's part of the karma that leads to the end of karma. You develop that sense of self because it's part of your strategy for happiness. Then when you reach the ultimate happiness, you don't need it anymore. You don't have to create it anymore. You can drop it. As John Sawat once said, once you've tasted the ultimate happiness, you don't care if there's a self-experiencer or not. It's no longer an issue. Because the happiness is there. And it's a totally harmless happiness. It doesn't take anything away from anyone else. Because it's totally unconditioned. So it's a noble path, and it leads to a noble destination. And that's when the qualities of the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha show that they really are a refuge. They provide genuine safety, genuine security. There's nothing else in the world that can match it.